time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Hello, I'm Steve Miller. Authorities and state media say the death toll from a powerful typhoon Haido in southern China has risen to at least 9. Macau's government information bureau said 5 people were killed and 153 were injured in a gambling enclave. China's official Xinhua news agency said Wednesday another 4 were killed in neighboring province of Guangdong, while one person remains missing. Haido is the most powerful typhoon to hit the area in 53 years, packing winds of up to 160 kilometers per hour on Tuesday. Qatar has restored full diplomatic relations with Iran, ignoring the demands of Arab nations now trying to isolate the energy-rich country to downgrade its ties. Qatar's foreign ministry announced early Thursday that the country's ambassador would return to Tehran. Qatar pulled its ambassador in early 2016 after Saudi Arabia's execution of a prominent Shiite cleric sparked attacks on 2 Saudi diplomatic posts in Iran. Qatar and Iran share a massive offshore natural gas field that requires communication between the two countries. Since the diplomatic dispute with Arab nations began in June, Iran has sent food shipments to Qatar. The BBC says a Thai lawyer has withdrawn a criminal defamation case against a British BBC journalist involving a report on foreigners being defrauded of property. The case against Jonathan Head, the BBC's Southeast Asia correspondent, had begun on Wednesday and has been criticized as an example of how Thailand's harsh criminal defamation laws can be used to intimidate journalists. This is VOA News. An airstrike on a hotel near a Houthi checkpoint has killed at least 35 people. The armed Houthi movement blamed the airstrike on Saudi-led coalition forces. Lucy Fielder reports.
At least 35 people have been killed in airstrikes that hit a hotel in Yemen, medics say. A TV station run by the armed Houthi rebel movement, however, put the death toll at least 41. It blamed the strike on Saudi-led coalition forces, which back the internationally recognized government. It didn't say how many of the dead were civilians or fighters. The hotel was north of the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, and next to a Houthi checkpoint. The Houthis control Sana'a in the north and are not known to have air power. An emergency worker saying there were about 100 people staying at the hotel at the time and that there were still victims under the rubble. A spokesman for the Saudi-led coalition said it was collecting information on the incident. The war has killed at least 10,000 people.
Reporter Lucy Fielder. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said on Wednesday that the Trump administration will bring the full measure of American economic and diplomatic power to bear to deal with the crisis in Venezuela.
No free people has ever chosen to walk the path from prosperity to poverty. No free people has ever chosen to turn what was once and still should be one of South America's richest countries into its poorest and most corrupt. But such is the plight of the Venezuelan people today. They've been brought to this point by the brutality and the barbarism of the Maduro regime.
In addition, Venezuela's recently ousted chief prosecutor accused President Nicolas Maduro and several allies on Wednesday of participating in acts of corruption, saying she would turn over proof that would help other countries prosecute. Venezuela's government quickly fired back, accusing Luisa Ortega Diaz of grave moral and ethical infractions. A United Nations committee has issued an appeal to the United States to repudiate racially motivated crimes and hate speech following a recent deadly white supremacist rally in the city of Charlottesville, Virginia, and warned a future failure to do so would spark more violence. Anastasia Crickley, the committee's chairperson.
This is a very serious response, a matter we have considered over an extended period of time, and one which we did not draw our conclusions lightly about.
The Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination cited the failure at the highest political level to unequivocally reject racist, violent events in the U.S. U.S.-Egypt ties, which had improved under President Donald Trump, appeared strained Wednesday after the U.S. withheld some aid to Egypt over human rights concerns. I'm Steve Miller in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's Angolan presidential election.
According to law, the final results must be announced at least on 6th of September 2017. Within less than 2 weeks, the National Electoral Commission must announce the final results.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaiva in Luanda. Liberia's president asked the legislature to consider a bill for smooth political transition and provide security for former presidents and vice presidents. School burnings are on the rise as a strike in Cameroon's English-speaking regions deepens, and the UN peacekeeping mission increases patrol in Bria, Central African Republic.
Priority number one is to provide security to civilians. And then we take measures like patrols to make sure that groups do not move around the city.
Vladimir Montero is MINUSCA spokesperson. Lawyers in South Africa prepare to file court papers to sue Mrs. Grace Mugabe. And armed groups in South Sudan have looted 24 medical facilities over the last 18 months. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's Angolan presidential and parliamentary elections. Six candidates are competing to succeed longtime President Eduardo dos Santos, who decided not to seek re-election after 38 years in power. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaiva says preliminary results are expected by tomorrow, Friday. He says overall the voting process was smooth compared to previous elections.
In comparison with the last elections, the current elections, of course, were more peaceful, more well-prepared, and the process went smooth. Myself, I went to a polling station early morning this Wednesday. It took me less than 2 minutes to vote, and the process went smooth almost everywhere. There's no major claims. Apart from that, we are listening in the last couple of hours some violent incidents happening in the Central Island province, like the Wambo. According to some opposition parties' sources, the police allegedly took the ballot boxes without the presence of some delegates of the opposition parties. We are waiting for an official response on this claim from the opposition parties.
The Angola Constitutional Court says that any party that has any grievances about the election should feel free to come to the court and not to do it through the media. I know that UNITA and CASA CE have already complained against the Election Commission. Do you think if they went to the Constitutional Court, can they get a fair hearing?
It's quite difficult because this will be unprecedented. You know, the war is in the last hours. You have these claims from the opposition parties that a number of violent incidents happened in Central and South provinces at the police stations. So I'm not sure if the Constitutional Court will agree to have this kind of claims. Anyway, these claims will be only putting on the table after the final result. And there's some kind of bureaucratic process for these claims to go ahead. So we will see. The next days will be quite definitive to clarify what will be the real political climate after the elections. Only when the final and official results will be announced, we can have clear visions about what kind of a scenario we have in Angola right now.
When do you think, Mario, that the Angolan people are going to get provisional results, and when do you think the final results will be announced?
According to law, the final results must be announced at least on 6th of September 2017. Within less than 2 weeks, the National Electoral Commission must announce the final results. As you know, there are some kind of technical and logistical problems. Angola is a huge country. Some observers are not sure if they will really reach this date of 6th of September. We will see. And if we have these claims on violence in some polling stations in the central and south province, it will be quite difficult to reach. But anyway, the next days will be, as I say before, it will be very important to clarify the next developments of the political scenario in Angola.
Mario, thank you very much as usual. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Yes.
As veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai, he was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. The United Nations peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic, known as MINUSCA, this week increased its patrols in the town of Bria after recent fighting in the area between ex-Seleka and anti-Balaka groups. MINUSCA spokesperson Vladimir Montere talked to Ricky Stryak about the new fighting and long-term solutions to the ongoing violence.
Well, the situation in Bria deteriorated since last week as a result of clashes between anti-Balaka elements and SPFC faction. It started with an incident and then get worsened. That was last week, and the force and MINUSCA police could intervene and separate the belligerents, but also protect the IDP sites. And on Saturday, once again, the same groups, anti-Balaka and ex-Seleka, from FPRC clashed again. We don't know so far the number of casualties, but we had to take a stand. Between 5,000 and 6,000 women and children, basically, sought refuge in our camp, and we were able to control the situation. It's still tense. It's still tense because of the presence of anti-Balakas in the area, which was not the case in the past. But it's calm since Saturday afternoon.
How long will MINUSCA continue the increased patrols?
Well, the patrols were increased as the incident started. You know, our policy in Bria and elsewhere is protection of civilians. It's priority number one, is to provide security to civilians. And then we take measures like patrols to make sure that groups do not move around the city and fight in the city, which can have more impact on civilian people. So that's the measures we are taking in Bria currently. At the same time, there are some mediations, local authorities and MINUSCA backing them to see how to escalate the situation.
And what is MINUSCA's view, the number one obstacle to stopping violence in the long term?
Well, MINUSCA's view is based on the government and the president's policy, which is a political process in order to disarm armed groups. This is our policy, and we are backing all this process. We are encouraging groups to adhere to this important document. But at the same time, we, whenever it's possible, we use the force to make sure that the population, civilian population, are not affected by this cycle of violence.
That was Vladimir Montero, MINUSCA spokesperson. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bangui. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has asked the national legislature to consider a bill that would make political transition smooth and also provide security for former presidents and vice presidents. While the president did not ask for immunity from prosecution for herself, she said other countries striving to consolidate their democracies have incorporated immunity provisions for their former presidents and vice presidents as encouragement for leaders not to perpetuate themselves in office. She said it will be up to the legislature to decide whether to include immunity in the bill. Topa Molba, a member of the House of Representatives, says he welcomes the bill, including immunity for former presidents and vice presidents.
The view is that there should be a procedure and what are the transitions to do from one government to another and what the upcoming president needs to do by law and what time the turnover note to be giving and everything had to be looked at by the legislature. And it should be by law. It's not just be verbally done. So around West Africa, we have seen that. And so we appreciate that she would be on her own to draft a bill and send to the legislature for consideration. We will look at it and also and pass on it. and that will be the law, and it will be on book. And next time, any president is turning over, that the procedure we will follow.
That bill also talks about, Mr. Representative, it talks about the need for a former president and former vice president to have an office space provided by the government, and also security for the former president or the vice president. What is the view so far? I know you are going to consider that, but what's your own view?
Well, my own view is Ghana former president, they're providing security and also office space that they can be able to get to them at any time. So for the reason we think it's not strained to West Africa, it will not be strained to all. So in my own view, and we'll try to talk to our colleagues, that indeed we have to look at that and take it into consideration. The great United States have the same thing. A former president to provide you security and also like to be able to recognize the services you have provided for the country. So we think that it should be doing the same thing in Liberia here.
In the bill, Representative, the president did not ask for former presidents or vice president to get immunity, but she alluded to it, saying that other countries have provided immunity to allow their leaders not to stay in power forever. But she said that whether that is inserted into the bill will be up to you, the members of the legislature. Let me ask you, Mr. Representative, do you think a former leader should get immunity?
Yeah, depend on what. If in your office you are taking decisions and somebody want to prosecute for that, I will not support that. But in the line of corruptions and if anything I'll be warning in that light, it's not different, it's criminal eye. But where are you are serving a president and you make decisions, some people will take it that is affect them, that they had to prosecute for that, I will not support that. It's the office you occupy at that time. This is why we think we will look at in its totality.
So, say, for example, President Sirleaf did something during her tenure as president. You would not support for her to be prosecuted for that?
No, I will not support that. But if a criminal, on our law, you are not immune and as a criminal or criminality. So, for the way I'm serving as president, I make a decision, you want for me to be prosecuted for that, I will not support that.
Tope Amolba is a member of the House of Representatives of Liberia. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 24th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 18 minutes past the hour. Lawyers in South Africa are set to file papers in court seeking permission to sue Zimbabwe First Lady Grace Mugabe, who allegedly assaulted South African model Gabriella Engels for socializing with Mrs. Mugabe's children. Willie Spears, attorney at the AFRI Forum representing Engels, says they expect to be granted permission by the South African courts to serve papers on President Robert Mugabe in Harare. Spears tells reporter Blessing Zulu that serving the papers on President Mugabe would ensure that Mrs. Mugabe also gets notice of the application.
We issued the papers in court. It will be served. We've got what we call in South Africa a sheriff. Is actually a messenger of court. The messenger of court will be sent to serve papers on our Minister of International Relations. That will happen within the next few days. But on the 19th of September, we will ask permission from the court to serve papers on the presidency in Harare so that Mrs. Mugabe also gets notice of the application. So the process on the 19th of September is actually an application in which we will ask the court for permission to sue Mrs. Mugabe. Yeah.
So the court is to make a determination?
Yes.
But Mr. Spies, do you have a legal leg to stand on, judging from the fact that Mrs. Mugabe was already granted this immunity?
Well, the papers that we are serving is our papers attacking the immunity that was granted. We say that it was granted unlawfully. Our legislation does not provide for that. and we are applying for a court order to set aside that immunity.
There were also some legal experts who were saying it's possible to actually go and file your papers in courts in Zimbabwe if there is no joy in South Africa. Is this something that you are also considering?
I'm very doubtful if we will pursue justice through a Zimbabwean court. We do not have lots of trust in the Zimbabwean legal system. To be honest, the legal system in Zimbabwe, from experience that we have, has been corrupted by the Mugabe regime. And I do not have lots of faith in that system, so we won't sue within Zimbabwe.
And lastly, there was another lady who we understand had a miscarriage, the waitress. Are you representing her now?
Not yet. We are trying to get in touch with her, but we are not yet. At the moment, we are only representing Ms. Engel.
That was Willie Spears, an attorney at AfriForum, speaking from Johannesburg, South Africa, with reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. At least half a dozen schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions have been burned in the past week. It is the latest sign of deepening tensions as the strike in those regions enters its 10th month. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Continued arson attacks in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest have prompted calls for the creation of a self-defense militia. Parents argued in Bamenda after their children's school, the Baptist Comprehensive High School, was set ablaze August 13th. Some said it is no longer safe for their children. The burnings have continued. Residents say schools are being targeted for failing to respect the call to strike until all Anglophone activists are released from detention. Messages circulating on social media this month have called for businesses to close 3 out of every 5 working days. Wilfred Ndong is a government official in charge of basic education for the Northwest.
The forces of law cannot be in every school. Therefore, parents, we have advised them to form vigilante groups in the school so that they can help to secure the places for us. And in places where they can afford, let them light up the places. Some of these things happen because of the dark nature of the environment's concern.
Markets and government buildings have also been targeted this year in the Northwest and Southwest. No one has claimed responsibility. The government has condemned the vandalism and blamed it on militant separatist groups. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma told VOA police discovered a cache of weapons and a bomb-making factory in the northwestern town of Mbengue earlier this month. He said 7 people were arrested, including a Cameroonian-born Belgian national who had smuggled his way into the country through Nigeria.
He admitted being a member of the Ambazonia and the main leader of the armed wing of the Liberation Movement of Southern Cameroon.
Ambazonia is the name proposed by separatist activists for the nation they would create. At least 60 people arrested in connection with the strike have been answering charges of attempting to destabilize the country and cause revolt before a military court in the capital. A black and white video released online in early August of 12 strike detainees in what appears to be a dark underground prison has further raised tensions. The government has declined to comment on the video, but the footage has been shared widely on social media in Cameroon. In it, the speakers compare their conditions of detention to concentration camps, but say they will gladly die if need be for the cause of independence for the two Anglophone regions. The statement shows the separatist agenda has eclipsed the original strikers' demands calls for reform by Anglophone teachers and lawyers to address what they said was the overbearing use of the French in the nation's education and legal systems. Cameroon is officially a bilingual country with Anglophones about 20% of the country's 23 million inhabitants. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The head of the French medical group Doctors Without Borders says over the last 18 months, armed groups have looted 24 medical facilities, which her organization has set up to provide life-saving assistance to South Sudanese. As Nabil Biagio reports from Juba, the group's international president has appealed directly to South Sudan President Salva Kiir to stop the attacks on medical facilities.
MSF President Joan Leo says the sad truth is that rather than protecting medical facilities, the warring parties will often target them. After recently visiting Wauchuluk, where she saw a destroyed MSF facility up close, she told President Kiir that the looting and destruction of medical facilities in South Sudan has cost lives.
For me, it's really just, I would say, a reflection of the violence that is happening. And what it does as the biggest consequence, it's depriving people of access to healthcare when they need it the most.
Leo says MSF's medical facilities were also destroyed in places like Pibor, Lir, and Kodok. But the level of destruction she saw in Wauchuluk was devastating.
We had to take a boat for half an hour, then we have to walk for half an hour. That was clear to me when I went there and walked through Wauchuluk, who's been completely burned down and looted. Our facility was a PHCC of 30 beds. It's completely gone.
Despite rampant insecurity across South Sudan, Leo says her organization has no plans to leave the country.
MSF as an organization is deeply committed to stay and work here in South Sudan, to stand beside the civilian population and offer as much as we can. And people must be allowed to have access to healthcare and life-saving services and assistance.
Leo says medical facilities must be protected. She says the war has taken a devastating toll on the civilians in former Upper Nile State, many of whom suffer from trauma.
When I was in the clinic in Abarok and I was in the clinic in Malakal, what was as well very, very striking is the fact that people have lost hope because they moved four times over the last few months and they started from scratch all over again with nothing. And then they have no perspective of anything positive to come.
Leo says the number of young South Sudanese men wanting to end their lives is on the rise, and so is the number of people seeking mental support. She says she hopes President Kiir and other government officials listen to her pleas.
And one of the things that I came and convey to everybody I met, and including at the highest level, was to say that the MSF is committed to the people of South Sudan, and we could continue to do work inside the country and as well as to displaced people. We have opened 7 other projects outside because people have fled the country. But the thing is, we ask for access, we ask for respect for where we work, for our mobile clinic, for the facilities where we have people, not for us, but for patients.
Leo says the lack of access to people in need is a big problem. She says MSF's clinic in Abroj, for example, is totally inaccessible by road due to insecurity. The government has repeatedly said it is committed to protecting aid workers and their assets, but the destruction and looting of medical facilities continues unabated in several parts of the country. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's Angolan presidential and parliamentary election. 6 candidates are competing to succeed longtime President Eduardo dos Santos, who decided not to seek re-election after 38 years in power. And that's it for this Thursday, August 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a good day.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.